A sports writer and aspiring novelist, Keith Reinhard was looking for a break from the high-speed pace of working for a Chicago-area newspaper. An old friend told him about a little Colorado town, Silver Plume, and Keith thought it would be the perfect location to take a sabbatical and work on a novel he'd always dreamed of writing. Keith took a leave of absence from work and, with some convincing, got his wife's blessing to spend 3 months in the small town tucked between the peaks of the Rocky Mountains. While Keith believed he would find himself, what he ended up finding was a mystery that perhaps led to his own disappearance. Keith was inspired by the story of a man named Tom Young, who had rented out the same building as him and who had disappeared a year earlier. When Tom Young's remains were found, Keith made the choice to walk into the mountains where Young had disappeared. He never returned, and in the wake, he left an enduring mystery that haunts his family and the people of Silver Plume. This is Trace Evidence, Episode 105, The Disappearance of Keith Reinhard. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today, we'll examine a case of two disappearances, one which would eventually be solved, and the other which remains a mystery to this very day. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on unsolved murders, disappearances, and other crimes. You can follow the show on social media on Twitter at TraceEvPod, Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or by searching Facebook for Trace Evidence Podcast. The show is also on MeWe and Minds. If you're interested in supporting the show, as it is a one-man operation, and you'd like to get some Trace Evidence swag, there's a Patreon at patreon.com/traceevidence, or you can donate directly via PayPal. Visit trace-evidence.com for all social media links, donation options, and contact information, as well as thorough information on all episodes. To submit case suggestions, you can visit the website or email me directly at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. Keith Reinhard was looking for a break from his busy and chaotic life in Chicago. He went looking for himself in a small town in Colorado and instead found a mystery that he eventually became a part of. This is Episode 105, The Disappearance of Keith Reinhard. Silver Plume, Colorado may be the very definition of what we imagine when we say small town. Located in Clear Creek County in central western Colorado, Silver Plume is a former mining town with a troubled history. Silver Plume would see its population grow to over 2,000 after it was first built, before a massive fire, a devastating avalanche, and the passage of a new law thinned out the town, at which time it began shrinking, though some chose to stay. By the late 1980s, Silver Plume had a population of just over 100 residents. Today, that number has stretched closer to 200, but hasn't yet hit the mark. Nestled between two peaks of the Rocky Mountains in the Clear Creek Valley, life in Silver Plume is quiet and laid back. UncoverColorado.com describes Silver Plume as a living ghost town. A few businesses dot the main street, though most don't come to Silver Plume for the business. There's hiking, fishing, skiing, and other outdoors activities that appeal to those seeking the challenge of the mountains, with Silver Plume holding an elevation of just over 9,000 feet. For those who may grow weary of the quiet life, Denver is just 46 miles to the east. For Keith Reinhard, though, it was the isolation and calm he found most appealing. Keith lived a busy life. He'd been working in the news business for 22 years, predominantly as a sports writer. In June of 1988, Keith was employed by the Daily Herald in Arlington Heights, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago, just 26 miles from the Windy City. Keith, 49 at the time, was experiencing what some have described as a sort of midlife crisis. He began looking back at his life and career and was realizing that there were so many things he had wanted to accomplish which had fallen by the wayside as he'd gotten older. Keith married his wife, Carolyn, just a few years earlier and was the happy and proud father of three children from his previous marriage. However, there was something in him that hungered for more, for the adventures of life he felt he'd missed out on. Among the things Keith sought to do was write a novel. It was a dream he had harbored for a long time, and he began to feel like it was now or never. Ted Parker owned and operated the KP Cafe in Silver Plume and was an old friend of Keith's, and through various conversations, Keith explained how he felt stressed out with the craziness of his busy life, and he expressed concerns about his age. He also wasn't happy about the fact that middle age had brought on a little extra weight, and he wanted to get himself in shape, in addition to finding a quiet reprieve in which to work on a novel. According to historicmysteries.com, Parker began to sell Keith on the idea of Silver Plume, noting that the small town offered a slower pace, a less stressful environment, and the one thing most novelists seek, peace and quiet. For Keith, it was a fairly simple choice to make. Head down to Silver Plume, spend a few months writing and relaxing, maybe even exploring the mountains and losing some weight in the process. For his wife, however, it wasn't initially so simple. Carolyn was concerned about Keith's interest in taking a few months away from everything, including her and his children, to chase down his dream. At the same time, she didn't want to hold him back from pursuing the things he had ignored for so long. After several conversations, a little convincing, and a promise that it would only be for a few months, Carolyn agreed. Keith even suggested to Carolyn that once he got settled in, she could join him and experience the town herself. Keith requested and was granted a 3-month leave of absence from the Daily Herald and began making plans to get to Silver Plume. Not sure of where he'd stay or how he'd pay the bills, Keith became aware, likely through Ted Parker, that there was a vacant building right next to his shop and he could lease it from him, open a small business, and use his free time to write. Keith was sold, packing up some belongings and purchasing a new computer on which he planned to write his book. Of course, there was one issue. Keith wasn't sure what he was going to write about. He had no way of knowing at the time, but the very building he would be leasing would provide him with all of the inspiration he could ever need. Keith arrived in Silver Plume that summer and found that Parker's description had been very accurate. He found a quiet little town surrounded by some of the most beautiful natural wonders he could imagine. Old Victorian buildings dressed up in new colors, vacant streets with little if any cars passing by, and intriguing stories about the way things used to be. The history of Silver Plume appealed to his curious nature, but it was the quiet calm which most grabbed his attention. Through his friend, Keith managed to lease the building next door, a former bookstore having been empty for about a year, though Keith didn't know yet why, and he created a small, quaint antique shop. There wouldn't be a ton of business, Keith imagined, but enough to keep the lights on. As it turned out, life in Silver Plume wasn't quite what Keith had imagined. He spent a lot of his days working in the store, a boring necessity that he found less of an inspiration and more of a hassle. The business wasn't doing well. Most businesses in Silver Plume weren't exactly breaking the bank. The novel writing wasn't coming along all that great either. Sitting in the living space above his shop, Keith would stare at a blinking cursor which seemed to taunt him. While the Chicago suburbs hadn't been the place to write, Keith was beginning to realize that a change of scenery hadn't really changed that situation. However, the very building in which Keith had opened his failing business harbored a mystery which would slowly engulf him, and it was through that mystery that he would finally find the inspiration he so desperately sought. While speaking to Ted Parker, Keith was informed that the building had previously been a bookstore owned by a man named Tom Young. A reporter, curious by nature, Keith began asking questions about the former owner and what led him to move away from Silver Plume. It was then that Keith was told the story which would intrigue him until the day he disappeared. Tom Young had leased the building for approximately a year, converting it into a bookstore and, by all accounts, being about as successful as Keith had been with his antique shop. On September 7th, 1987, Tom Young walked out of the bookstore with his beloved dog, Gus. He locked the shop behind him and seemingly disappeared into thin air. In the days and weeks leading up to his disappearance, Young had told friends and locals of Silver Bloom that he was going to take a trip to Europe, see the world a little bit before returning back to town and giving the bookstore another shot. It was for this reason that no one really noted Young as missing right away. In fact, it would take 3 weeks before anyone thought to report Young's absence. It became the talk of the town, the mystery of Tom Young and what might have become of him. Some believed he'd gone to Europe and chosen to stay there. Others argued that he may have decided not to return to Silver Plume and thought to strike out for a bigger, more vibrant city. No matter what way you sliced it, there certainly wasn't anyone who imagined Young hadn't actually made it very far beyond the borders of Silver Plume itself. Fascinated by the mystery of Tom Young's disappearance, Keith began working on his novel. He thought the story would make an interesting read, and perhaps partially due to the lack of stimulus he'd found in Silver Plume, he was eager to explore this mystery. Working out of the same building that Young had, Keith spent a lot of his time trying to figure out what might have happened to him. He began with a series of interviews, speaking with residents about Young, finding out who he was, what he was like, what they thought might have become of him. He gathered extensive notes and began putting the pieces together for his book, but there was also something beyond the book itself. He wanted to solve the mystery, and for the first time since he'd set foot in town, he'd found something which truly captured his attention. However, his interest in Young's disappearance would quickly become all-encompassing. In Keith's novel, he created a character which was a blend of Tom Young and himself. He named that character Guy Gypsum. Perhaps the mountains inspired the last name, with gypsum being a rock-forming mineral typically found in sedimentary deposits. Either way, Keith was moving along with his novel and continuing to dig into Tom Young's life, and most intriguingly, the days and weeks leading up to his disappearance. The Clear Creek County Sheriff's Department wasn't able to provide Keith with a great deal of information for his work. Tom Young had disappeared, that much they knew, and they hadn't been able to locate him, but where he had gone, they just couldn't say. Searches had been conducted, but no traces had ever been found, and the mountainous terrain provided a lot of places where someone could go missing and never be found. While Silver Plume itself was a small town, it is surrounded by a vast wealth of wilderness and mountains. Had Young not traveled out of the area, it would be incredibly difficult to locate him, if he wanted to be located at all. While Young's disappearance was curious, there wasn't exactly a feeling of urgency. For all anyone knew, Young could be living in Las Vegas or maybe Madrid. There was no way to validate any of the theories, and there was even less to confirm Tom Young's intentions and travels. Whatever might have been the fate of Tom Young, Keith was working hard to write the novel and seek out the truth of its inspiration. However, in the middle of Keith's investigation, the mystery would finally be solved, in a manner of speaking. On July 31st, two hunters making their way through the mountains came upon a disturbing scene. They found the skeletal remains of a man leaning up against a tree. Nearby were the skeletal remains of a dog. The sheriff's department was notified, and after being led to the scene, they examined the remains and determined that they had been there for approximately a year. The remains of the man and the dog revealed that both had bullet wounds in their skulls. Nearby the remains, sheriff's deputies recovered a backpack and a revolver. After the victim's remains were brought in for a forensic examination, the coroner confirmed them to be those of Tom Young and determined that the gunshot had likely been self-inflicted. The presence of the gun nearby seemed to confirm that this had been a suicide, and it was believed that Young's story about going to Europe may have been a cover story he told to avoid being found. After the discovery, authorities learned that just 4 days prior to leaving town, Tom Young had purchased that gun. According to a 2019 article on CoolInterestingStuff.com, then-Sheriff's Deputy Dave Dauenhauer explained that the hunters came upon the remains, and he also explained what was determined by the investigation, saying, quote, They were up there exploring some territory for the bow hunting season, which was coming up, and they found his remains. Also found at the scene was a revolver. In subsequent investigation, we found that Tom had purchased a gun approximately 4 days before he was last known to be in Silver Plume. The Tom Young case is closed, and it has been ruled a suicide, both by the coroner's office and the Clear Creek County Sheriff's Department. End quote. The people of Silver Plume were a little less convinced than the Sheriff's Department. While it certainly seemed plausible that it had been a suicide, others argued that perhaps Tom had come upon someone in the mountains who had gotten the gun away from him and pulled the trigger. Some believe that Tom had been murdered based purely on the fact that his dog, Gus, had been his constant companion, and it was difficult for them to accept that he'd have killed Gus rather than leaving him behind. Theories about the fate of Tom Young were only intensified when it was later shown that ballistic tests had not been able to conclusively link the deadly bullets to the gun found at the scene. While there were those who spoke about the possibility of a homicide, as far as law enforcement was concerned, it was an open and shut case of a clear suicide. Most of the details seemed to lead to that, even if the ballistics couldn't. Why would Young tell everyone he was going off to Europe and instead march into the dangerous mountain terrain if for no reason other than to take his own life? It was surmised that Young had become disillusioned with life in Silver Plume, was watching his bookstore slowly sink into insolvency, and had made the choice to end his own life, bringing along his best friend Gus, and not wanting to abandon the dog, he decided that they would both be better off just ending it all. It was a horrible story for the town, and a sad tragedy for those who knew Young. They struggled to accept this information. Keith Reinhardt, however, found himself getting more deeply invested in the story than he had been prior to the discovery of Young's remains and the release of the official ruling. Just a week after Young's remains had been found, Keith himself would mysteriously vanish, leading to one of the most bizarre mysteries and intensive search efforts ever conducted in the state of Colorado. For the week following Young's discovery, Keith continued speaking to locals about him while working on the novel. While many thought that the end of the mystery would result in Keith asking less questions, it only seemed to inspire more. On August 6th, the night before he vanished, Keith attended a party. Several attendees and friends of Keith's later told police that he had been talking about West Virginia, saying that he wanted to visit the state, though why has never been explained, perhaps not even by Keith himself at the time. Reportedly, Keith spent a lot of time at the party speaking with a woman no one could identify. Authorities believe she may have been from Denver and either had the name Greta or maybe Gretchen. Who the mysterious was and what they discussed has never been ascertained. The next day, on the evening of August 7th, Keith walked out of his antique shop and locked the door behind him. He began walking through town, and whenever he ran into someone, he explained that he was going to hike up Mount Pendleton, which peaks at 12,275 feet. Keith had tried and made some excursions into the mountains prior to this, though he was met with challenges from his physical limitations combined with his excessive fear of heights, which often caused him to experience vertigo. He had been to the mountain several times with others, but he'd never gone alone and he had never reached the peak. However, on this day, he seemed focused on making the trip. No one really thought he would, though. The trip to the mountain, which had to be made on foot, would take approximately 6 hours, and it was already late in the day. Hiking the mountains during daylight was one thing, but trying to make that trek in the night was something much more dangerous and challenging. At approximately 4 p.m., Keith made his way into Ted Parker's cafe and began talking about making the hike to Pendleton Mountain. Parker kind of laughed, thinking Keith was just blowing hot air. In an interview, Parker later explained, saying, quote, "He was in the cafe and told me he was going to make it to the top of the mountain. If I don't come back, call on the rescue," he said in jest. "I felt." I have this picture of him pointing to the mountain and saying goodbye. That was the last time I saw him. End quote. Parker had good reason to assume Keith was only joking around. He didn't have anything with him. no pack, no supplies, and he certainly wasn't dressed for a nighttime mountain climb, which, even if he had been, would have been ill-advised. Keith didn't even bring along clothing to deal with the climate or the cold nights that can come sweeping through the mountains in the evening. There was a sighting of Keith at approximately 4:30 p.m. when he was witnessed walking in the direction of the mountain. The last official sighting, according to the Daily Sentinel, came at 5:05 p.m. when he was seen in front of Buckley's General Store, located on the edge of town on a frontage road for Interstate 70. Keith apparently entered the store and purchased a soft drink. Friends would later say that Keith had told them he would be back around 10 p.m., which makes little sense unless he wasn't really planning to try and scale the mountain. Concern came the following morning when Keith failed to open his shop. Since Parker owned the building and was leasing it to Keith, he had a key and was able to get inside. When he entered the living area, he looked around but didn't see anything out of place. He called out for Keith, but there was no sign of his friend and no indication that he'd spent the night in his home. There was a newspaper lying next to Keith's computer, open to an article about the discovery of Tom Young's remains. In a bizarre coincidence, or perhaps a clue as to what may have happened, Keith's novel was still on the computer, and the final lines written only added to the mystery and to the concern for Keith's safety. According to Unsolved Mysteries, the passage read, quote, "Guy Gypsum changed into some hiking boots and donned a heavy flannel shirt. He understood it all now, and his motivation. Guy closed the door, then walked off towards the lush, shadowless Colorado forest above." End quote. When no one could find Keith, and no one could be found who had seen him since the previous evening, the Clear Creek County Sheriff's Department was notified, and a missing persons report was filed. The Sheriff's Department was concerned, having just found Young's remains on the mountains, and after being informed about Keith's apparent obsession with the case and his inexperience in the forest and mountains, a search party was quickly put together to begin looking for the missing novelist. The search was extremely intensive and difficult. It involved helicopters, volunteers, members of the Alpine Rescue Team, search and rescue members from neighboring states, tracking dogs, and law enforcement. All told, more than 125 searchers and a dozen tracking dogs scoured the forest and the mountainside. The search for Keith was a treacherous one. Tracking dogs had to have their paws wrapped to make it over several areas of broken and sharp rocks. Experienced hikers and search members poured through the forest and mountains but found the terrain incredibly difficult to navigate, making them believe it unlikely that if Keith did make it to the mountain, that he would have ascended too high, especially under the cover of night. It was thought at the time that Keith may have gotten lost on his way to the mountain, and considering the density of the forest, he could be almost anywhere, especially if he'd become disoriented or begun wandering in one direction or another. Factor in panic and hunger, and it was a dangerous situation for anyone to find themselves in. 5 days into the search, on Friday, August 12th, a terrible accident happened. Terry Leedens, a pilot for the Civil Air Patrol who were assisting in the search, was killed when his single-engine Cessna crashed at approximately 9:45 a.m., according to the Daily Sentinel. Leedens' co-pilot, Don Drobny, was injured but survived. The plane had been flying over the area, providing communications to searchers on the ground when it went down south of Silver Plume near Leavenworth Creek. The plane was located due to its tracking beacon, and while the wreckage was being examined, searches for Keith resumed, though all searches would be called off just days later. During the search, which lasted approximately a week, no sign or trace of Keith was ever found, not even a shred of clothing after more than 10,000 man-hours searching. After the termination of the search, Charlie Shizmansky, the head of the Alpine Rescue Team, spoke to reporters about the challenges of the search and the harshness of the terrain. Shizmansky stated, quote, "The Reinhard search was like looking for the proverbial needle in a haystack. This haystack is 3,000 vertical feet of 60-degree slope. This was about as difficult a search terrain as we cover. We were at a real disadvantage because Keith went into the mountains wearing no more than blue jeans and a flannel shirt and tennis shoes. He had no backpack. He had no equipment. A typical subject of a search will leave lots of clues for us to trace. Keith didn't leave many clues. He didn't have many with him to leave behind. End quote. As part of their search for information, police went through all of Keith's belongings. They read through his novel, developed the film and his camera, but there was nothing which revealed to them any indications of what may have happened. Keith's family were shocked by his disappearance. It seemed completely unlike him to go out there on his own, especially considering the circumstances. He was developing his novel. He had recently contacted his boss at the Daily Herald, Bob Frisk, and requested that he be allowed to cover the Chicago Bulls basketball team on his return to work. Keith loved his wife and his children, and it was simply impossible for them to imagine or accept any theories about him running off to start a new life, leaving them behind. For them, it seems most probable that something went wrong that night when he disappeared into the forest, and despite extensive searches, it might have been easy to miss a single man in that massive spread of natural wonder. His daughter, Tiffany, though, had a somewhat different view, telling a reporter, quote, "Writers like to live the story they're writing about, get a feel of it so it's easier for them to write about it. Maybe my father, it's always possible, wanted to feel what it's like to disappear so he could write about it." End quote. That was somewhat of a common belief at the time, that Keith may have elected to disappear not for his own plans of running off, but to get the experience of what it was like. Of course, with more than 30 years having passed, it seems more likely that had Keith decided to disappear, he'd have surfaced by now. Unless, of course, something did go wrong that night in the forest and he found himself unable to return. One of Keith's sons, Kai Allen, believed that his father had to have experienced some sort of foul play, as it was incredibly unlikely he wouldn't return to his family. Kai later ascended Pendleton Mountain, experiencing the emotional onslaught of being in the very place his father may have vanished from, or perhaps still remains. Beyond the searches, the family did everything in their power to try and find Keith. They raised awareness about his disappearance, printed flyers, made appearances on national television shows, and they even went so far as to speak with psychics, but nothing ever resulted in new information or any clues about Keith and what may have become of him. A plaque bearing a poem written by Keith was eventually placed on the mountain, a marker and memorial for the man who never returned to the small town in which he sought peace and inspiration. For the people of Silver Plume, it became an enduring mystery. The writer who sought the truth about a man who vanished and then vanished himself. It was almost life imitating art, but for some, the coincidence of both Keith and Tom Young having leased the same building and then meeting their fate in the surrounding mountains was just too much to be dismissed. Some of them still failed to accept the official ruling in the death of Young, let alone to try and wrap their heads around Keith's disappearance. And of course, there was the mystery woman he had been seen talking to. There are those who wondered what secrets their conversation may have held, if any at all. Indeed, the story had all of the mystery and intrigue any novelist could want to write a compelling story. But in this case, the novel would never be completed, and the mystery of what happened to Keith Reinhard would continue to haunt everyone who dug into the case. Several theories about the disappearance of Keith Reinhard have been suggested over the years. Some believe that the inexperienced hiker went into the mountains seeking a story and instead found his own fate, be it due to an accident, exposure, or perhaps the attack of a wildlife predator. Others argue that Keith faked his own disappearance, maybe to start a new life off somewhere else, to travel and see more of the world and escape the busyness and stress of his regular life. Others still believe that Keith, and perhaps Tom Young, may have found something on that mountain that someone didn't want them to see, or perhaps they simply found someone who didn't want to be found. If alive today, Keith Reinhard would be turning 82 years old. When last seen, Keith was described as being a white male, standing 6 feet 2 inches tall and weighing approximately 210 pounds. He has gray hair and blue eyes. On the day of his disappearance, Keith was wearing a t-shirt, dark red and black plaid flannel shirt, blue jeans, and old sneakers. He was last seen exiting the town of Silver Plume, heading in the direction of Pendleton Mountain. Keith left behind a wife, Carolyn, and 3 children, Tiffany, Sven, and Kai Allen. Tragically, Sven died in an accident in 2001 due to carbon monoxide poisoning. His first wife, Astrid, the mother of his children, still wonders what might have become of Keith, believing he would eventually be found. His wife at the time of his disappearance, Carolyn O'Donnell, remarried in 1999. Keith was eventually declared legally dead, though for his family, desperate hopes remain that someday they will find out what became of him. For Kai Allen, however, it is the story of his father's disappearance that continues to give him hope. He told the Daily Herald, quote, "I believe foul play was involved. Until somebody speaks about something, I don't think there will be any resolution. But I enjoy talking about it, because that means he's still around." I've been pretty open about my own struggles with depression and anxiety. Recently, I found BetterHelp, an online service that provides you with a counselor who can help you through hard times or just with the general stress of life. For me, BetterHelp has truly been a comforting service to employ. Is there something in your life that prevents you from being happy or stops you from reaching your goals? Sometimes you just need someone to talk to, someone who knows how to help. And that's why BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. Through BetterHelp, you can speak with a professional counselor in a safe and private environment. This can all be done online, making it both comfortable and convenient. With BetterHelp, you can get help on your own schedule at your own pace. You can communicate through secure video, phone sessions, or even chat and texting. There are professional counselors specializing in many different areas such as depression, stress, anxiety, anger, family conflicts, trauma, grief, and more. If for some reason you're unhappy with your counselor, you can change at any time with no additional charge. BetterHelp employs more than 3,000 licensed therapists across all 50 states, but it's not just limited to the United States. BetterHelp is available around the world. You can be matched up with a counselor in less than 24 hours. BetterHelp is available on desktop, mobile web, Android, and iOS. BetterHelp is professional, convenient, and affordable, with financial aid being available to those who qualify. To make BetterHelp even more affordable, Trace Evidence listeners get 10% off their first month using the discount code TRACE. So why not get started today? Go to BetterHelp.com/trace. Simply fill out a questionnaire so they can assess your needs and match you with a counselor that you'll love. Remember, to save 10% off your first month, visit BetterHelp.com/trace. True crime is my passion, but even I need the occasional break. So when I feel like I need a mental palate cleanser, my go-to refresher is Best Fiends. Best Fiends provides a fun and challenging series of puzzles that require strategy and planning, but remain fun and exciting. While Best Fiends has challenging puzzles, it's a casual game that anyone can play, even if it's made for adults. I'm always looking for something fun to keep my mind busy, and Best Fiend offers that and more. I've been playing for a few hours a day and have already reached level 40. I play a lot during my downtime. Best Fiend certainly makes slow moments in life pass by a lot quicker and with a lot more fun. I've even got my friends and family playing along with me. The colors are vibrant and pop right off your screen, the puzzles are enjoyable, and the cute little bug characters make funny sounds that make me laugh every time I hear them. In this game, you play against slugs, and so much fun to defeat them and level up your arsenal of bugs. You can even share your progress on social media, which inspires me to challenge and surpass my friends, making this 5-star game not just entertaining, but rewarding. Best Fiends updates monthly with new levels and events, so there's always something new to experience. What I really love is that it doesn't even need internet to be played, so when I'm on a plane or someplace where I can't connect, I can still play and have all the fun I have right on my own couch. I really enjoy unlocking new characters and leveling them up, seeing how the puzzles change and what new ways I can conquer the challenges. Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. You can download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Friends, but without the R. Best Fiends. I've totally become obsessed with playing Best Fiends, and it's such an enjoyable part of my day. Best Fiends has been downloaded over 100 million times, and I can totally see why. I used to play games on my phone all the time, but a lot of them became complicated or difficult to keep up with. Best Fiends provides a casual experience, play at your own pace, and you can come back to it any time. If you're looking for a fun, challenging, and rewarding game to play, I can't recommend Best Fiends any more highly. Download and play today, and maybe you can even challenge me. Download Best Fiends on the Apple App Store or Google Play today. The disappearance of Keith Reinhardt is one of those cases that's so bizarre and mysterious that I've thought about it a lot over the years. Maybe it's something to do with the idea of a writer getting lost in his own work, so much so that he becomes a part of it. Maybe it's the coincidence of two men living in the same space, renting the same building, both disappearing, even if one was later found. Maybe it's just the sadness of a man looking to find himself, and in the process, vanishing off the face of the earth. For some, Keith's disappearance is truly a haunting mystery. For others, it's a cut-and-dry case about an inexperienced hiker getting lost in the overwhelming wilderness of Colorado. No matter what way you put it, a family lost a father and a husband, and that, in and of itself, is enough to make this case another sad and disturbing mystery. We essentially have three theories that have been suggested over the years. Moving in order from the least likely to the most, we'll begin with the theory that, while popular with locals at the time, provides the least amount of evidence and substance. That theory being that both Keith Reinhardt and Tom Young found someone or something on that mountain which resulted in their murders. It's not uncommon for murder to be considered a possibility in a case like this, and when you factor in the way Tom Young was found, to a degree, I can understand why people might make a similar argument about the way Keith Reinhardt vanished. Perhaps, to truly look into this theory, we should start with Tom Young himself. There's not a lot of background information about Tom Young out there. We know that he came to Silver Plume, much like Keith. He rented the building next to the cafe, converted it into a bookstore, wasn't doing well financially, and then came up with a story about going off to Europe. It was weeks before anyone noticed he was actually missing, and by the time they did notice, no one had any idea where he was. 10 months passed before he and his dog's remains were found, and while for law enforcement the situation was self-explanatory, there were those who struggled to accept that Young would have committed suicide, let alone taken the life of his beloved dog. However, considering the evidence present, I tend to side with law enforcement here. He bought a gun days before he died. The gun was found next to his body. Both he and the dog died of a single gunshot wound. Things weren't going great for him in Silver Plume. It seems unlikely that someone up in the mountains who was going to kill Young would have been able to get a clean shot off in his dog also. If someone else was there, if it was a threatening situation, I'd expect the dog to have been going wild and a shot to the body would have been more likely. Young was found leaning up against a tree, which seems a bit odd that someone would have you sit against a tree before shooting you. Maybe he managed to get there after being shot. Maybe he was tied and the ties were removed afterward. Being that his remains were skeletal, it's difficult to know for sure. However, given the details, the evidence, and the fact that Young said he was going away, but instead walked off into the mountains with his dog, it's difficult for me to believe this was a homicide or a situation where Young came upon someone and someone killed him. This, in my opinion, extends into Keith's case as well. More than 100 people searched the mountains and forest for Keith. While I don't know the exact number of people involved, searches were also conducted looking for Tom at the time of his disappearance. With all those people pouring over that area, including the two hunters who eventually found Young, not one of them found anything up there which someone would be killed over. No one was found hiding out in the woods, and you'd have to imagine that if they killed Young, maybe they could have been involved in what happened to Keith. However, what's the likelihood that someone was hanging out in the middle of nowhere looking to kill someone on the off chance that they came wandering up? You also have to consider a lot of people hike in that area and scale the mountains, and none of them have ever come across anything either. While I think the homicide angle is intriguing, there just doesn't seem to be enough to support it. Maybe if Keith was found and there was an indication of foul play, I'd be inclined to side with that theory, but things being as they are, there's really nothing to work with. Some people have brought up the mysterious woman that Keith was seen talking to at the party. Her name is unknown, other than it could be Greta or Gretchen, and it's believed she was from Denver. That's not a lot to work with either, but what are the chances she came into this incredibly small town with the intention of finding someone to kill, or to set up to be killed, and that plan involved this person walking off into the mountains with no equipment and no preparation? It just doesn't make sense. However, there are those who believe this woman could have played a different role if Keith manufactured a story about going into the mountains to cover up a plan to disappear and start a new life. Keith was obviously struggling with his life, at least in terms of work and the many dreams he'd felt were unfulfilled. His job was overwhelming, the busyness of city life was stressing him out, and he was turning 50, feeling the weight of his own impending fate, that same feeling everybody gets as they grow older. His mindset at the time has been described as a midlife crisis, and that certainly seems applicable. Silver Plume was supposed to provide him with purpose, to help him find himself. And yet, for the most part, what he found was a failing business, an isolated location, and the one thing that may have kept him going, a mystery that inspired a novel. So would it be difficult to imagine he could have wanted to run off and start a new life? That depends how you look at it. Keith's family finds it difficult to believe that he would just walk out on them, and judging from what I've read about Keith, he certainly doesn't seem like the type to just abandon those he loves. Sure, he took some time off to go to Silver Plume, but it wasn't like he severed contact or distanced himself from his family. They still talked. He still had his intentions of returning. Not long before he disappeared, he corresponded with his boss at the Daily Herald, discussing plans that he'd like to do upon return to his job. He told his friend, Ted Parker, that he'd be returning that evening around 10 p.m., and even joked what to do if he didn't return. Now, some might see that as Keith laying down the seeds of his disappearance, while others might think that this was just a guy who knew he wasn't going to be climbing that mountain that night and would probably return before he even got to it. We also have to factor in how Keith's disappearance, partially due to his job, partially due to the connection to Tom Young, became a major news story for a while. Where could Keith have gone where no one would notice him? How could he have stayed hidden for all the years afterwards? There's never been activity on his social security number. He walked away with nothing beyond the clothes on his back. That would seem like a very difficult way to try and start a new life. Some have argued that the mysterious woman may have aided him in this escape from his reality, but we really know nothing about her besides the fact that they chatted at a party and, according to everything I've read, there's no indication that Keith left with that woman, nor was she seen in Silver Plume again. What are the chances he just met a woman randomly at a party, confessed to her a desire to run off, and she was like, "Sure, I'll give you a hand"? I get the romance of it, for lack of a better term. A novelist writing about a man disappearing and then he disappears himself. It's like something you'd see in a movie, and there's a lot of meat on that bone for people who wish to dig into it. But really, all you're working with is conjecture and speculation. It's the mystery aspect that draws people in. But when reality starts bleeding into it, it suddenly loses its zest. Would Keith truly have abandoned his children, his wife, his job, and his entire life to take a chance on starting anew? Would he have been able to stay away all these years, reading the stories about himself, seeing his family's pain? I think it takes a special kind of person, and not in a good way, to be able to do that. Someone without a conscience, or perhaps a blunted conscience, and that just doesn't seem to be Keith. Finally, what about the novel? This was his dream, something he wanted desperately to complete. Would he have walked out on that dream along with everything else? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It seems more likely that he went off to see the area Tom Young was found in, to find further inspiration in the forest and on the mountains, and due to his inexperience, lack of equipment, and lack of planning, something went horribly wrong. So let's discuss that here with the final theory. If you've never been hiking in a densely wooded and mountainous area, you have no idea just how overwhelming it can be. I live in the mountains, and at least twice a month during the summer, there are stories on the news about people getting lost in one of the nearby parks or forests. Some of these people have lived here their entire lives. Some of them are experienced hikers. However, when you find yourself in the middle of the forest, disoriented and unsure of where to go, panic begins to set in. As the sun starts sinking, that panic grows, and before you know it, you're lost. Now, today, most people bring some kind of a GPS unit with them, a weapon for protection or hunting, some kind of communication device, although oftentimes the wilderness is a giant dead zone for cell phones. Keith brought nothing. At a minimum, you should bring water. Hiking through the forest, trying to climb mountains without some kind of water is going to be incredibly challenging, if not impossible. Most people bring supplies, food, extra clothing should the weather turn. Again, Keith walked off from Silver Plume with little more than the clothes on his back and possibly a can of soda. These are not the best preparations for a nighttime hike into the mountains. Not even for a highly experienced hiker who's been in that area many times. That wasn't Keith, though. He was a city guy. He worked in the Chicago suburbs. We don't know his entire background, but there doesn't appear to be anything in it to suggest he'd done this kind of thing before. The mountains of Clear Creek County offer several predators who might prey on a lone man walking through the forest at night. There are black bears, bobcats, elk, wolverines, and mountain lions all in that area. Considering the isolation of the location and the density of the forest cover, it isn't hard to imagine that the numbers of those predators are probably higher than you'd find in more traveled areas. We know from the search teams that there are sharp and steep slopes, sharp rocks, and dangerous cliffs to deal with. It isn't all that difficult to imagine Keith could have found himself injured or possibly killed by any number of wild animals or the dangerous terrain itself. Take how dangerous that area is, cover it in pitch black, and now your chances of survival are even less than they would have been during daylight. Remember, the search team described trying to find Keith as looking for a needle in a haystack, and that's under the assumption that he was still alive. Had he fallen into some kind of a cavern, hole, off a cliff, how hard would it be to find him then? He could have even just been unconscious, but you're looking for someone in such a vast area who could be tucked into a dark crevice that you're never going to find him in. Part of what made the search even more difficult was that he brought so little with him, that even if he'd wanted to leave a trail behind, he couldn't. It isn't difficult to imagine some soft earth, a slip and a fall, or even a predator attack. From the peak of Mount Pendleton to the next peak is an area of 2.32 square miles. Looking at a satellite image of the area tells a pretty convincing story about how vast the wilderness is in that area and how difficult it would be to make your way out if you found yourself lost in the heart of it. While I'm certainly someone who's drawn to the intrigue of a good mystery, this is a case where the mystery seems more about telling a legend over confronting the likely reality. For law enforcement, searchers, and many who have examined this case, the likelihood that Keith could have walked into that wilderness at night and returned on his own is really fairly limited. The disappearance of Keith Reinhardt is a sad story about a man who wanted to find himself and instead lost everything. For some, it will always be about foul play, despite a lack of any evidence, although it can't be officially ruled out. For others, it's a cautionary tale about what happens when you go off into the wilderness with little experience, equipment, or preparation. His family, 30 years later, still wonders what became of him, and while there is the possibility that someday those answers will be found, there's also the realization that the forest may hold dark secrets. And after 30 years, if indeed Keith did walk into the forest and get lost, hurt, or killed, there may be little, if anything, to find at all. If you're looking for more information about the disappearance of Keith Reinhard, there are many news articles and websites discussing his case. The Travel Channel did an episode about Keith's story entitled Lost in the Wild, and there's a documentary available entitled Dark Side of the Mountain. You can find Keith's case on NamUs under number MP12067. Thus far, there have been 13 exclusions when comparing them to the missing Keith Reinhard. If you have any information about the disappearance of Keith Reinhard, please contact the Clear Creek County Sheriff's Department at 303-679-2376. What do you believe happened? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, tag me on Instagram at TraceEvidencePod, or comment in the Facebook group. I've had a couple of people ask me about the availability of Trace Evidence merchandise. There's a couple of places you can go. You can go to traceevidence.threadless.com to see a wide selection of t-shirts and stickers and other items. You can also just go straight to the website trace-evidence.com and click the merch link in the header, which will provide you with links to places where all Trace Evidence merchandise is available. One final note, are you planning to attend CrimeCon this year in Orlando? If you are and you haven't yet purchased your ticket, you can use the promo code TRACE2020 to get 10% off today. I'm going to be there on Podcast Row representing Trace Evidence, and I would love to see you there. So, when purchasing your tickets, use promo code TRACE2020, and I look forward to seeing you. It's time to thank our Patreon producers. Special shout out to Tara Doble, Alicia Lorraine, Angie Dodd, Brittany Bivens, Brian Kemmerling, Roberta Jansen, Krista Colvin, Diane Dyson, Eamon Brady, Brett Eady, Kevin Bonham, Emily Smith, Emma Vachon, Gerard Lopez Barbosa, Jessica, Laura Dickinson, Linda Halcrow, Nick Mohar Schurz, Megan Cotter, Quinn McBreen, Randy Weiland, Robbie Blue, Tom Archer, and Tracy Woods. If you think your name should be on this list but it's not, please contact me as Patreon is often terrible at organizing the lists properly. That's going to do it for this week's episode. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm going to leave you with a promo for another podcast I think you might enjoy called The Devil We Know. I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.
The neighborhood is unsafe, the streets unlit. While others sleep soundly, you lie awake because you know the truth. You know that, no matter where you go, there's always a chance that a monster is in your midst. The darkness that runs deep within our own veins, the evil found in even the sweetest of souls, sometimes comes to light. And when it does, the result is a person that takes on that evil, that wears it proudly, and becomes part of the darkness itself. I am Aaron from Devil We Know Podcast. And on our true crime show, we dive into the scariest corners of our past and present to reveal the devil we know. A father, a mother, a brother, a sister, and anyone, anywhere who hides in plain sight, living a life of bloody secrets while living just next door. Come check us out and hear the chilling true stories about the devils we know.